Of course, it's only my imagination. Because Bobby Wright said this along, because, you know, being a revolutionary, banging on that beast at least weekly, maybe not daily, but at least on a weekly basis, banging on the beast. You know, I've found out, I kind of thought, you know, this could be dangerous. You know, this is not the safest thing. You know, today is Fred Hampton's day, so we know they can't kill revolution, but they have no qualms about killing the revolutionary. But then Bobby Wright said, you know, they don't pay attention to the revolutionaries. They don't pay attention to people like me. They don't pay attention for people who call for uprising, unification, revolutionary warfare, subversion of the dominant paradigm. They don't pay attention to people like me. They pay attention to y'all. They keep their fingers on the pulse of the masses, the unwashed masses, you human resources, you apolitical, indifferent consumers. And they say when you start to move, you know, the most powerful compounding interest, the most powerful force in nature, the masses of humanity, when someone is able to plug into that, that's when and only then do the elites take action. Because you've got people all over the world. You've got the Revolutionary Communist Party right here in the United States, Bob Avakian, Carl Dix, Susara Tara. You got radical feminists. You got all kind of people who are against the system, who oppose the status quo. And like myself, even if we diverge, even if we disagree with each other, and we're all over the place enjoying this thing they call the freedom of speech. There's no real freedom of speech in the United States. Understand that. That's more window dressing, like all men are created equal. Gil Scott Sarans said the Constitution ain't nothing but a piece of paper. And that's it. The Constitution will not protect you. I love seeing these black folks, especially you sovereign, Moorish, Hebrew, whatever stupid ideology, y'all, how y'all talk y'all rights. And y'all even walk up in a courtroom telling a white man about his document that he wrote, about how to properly apply his document. You know, and so it ain't nothing but a piece of paper. And y'all like to tell the white man about what he wrote and what he said. But you said, you know. But it ain't nothing but a piece of paper. So there's no real free speech. But they let people like me and all these other people jawbone and pontificate and yell, scream, hoop and holler about the injustices of the world. They even let us conceptualize and advocate for specific changes, for specific transformation of society. But until what they call the tipping point is reached, until they see fundamental change. See, here's the thing. They don't care how many of y'all go to Antifa marches, how many of y'all go online with your Black Lives Matter credit card and buy some Black Lives Matter t-shirts. MasterCard, I think it's, or is it Visa? Black Lives Matter and Visa have teamed up to bring you. Anyway, they don't care about that because they know after the march, after the Antifa march, as long as you stroll into Starbucks, after the Black Lives Matter rally, or even when after your Black Lives Matter shirt comes in, you still wake your ass up and go to work and sit at your desk and fulfill your human resource duty. They know it's a pressure valve. This protest, this radicalism, these dangerous ideas, this natural hairstyle, black girl magic, this black man tattooing RBG across his forehead, they know that's just letting off steam. That's dancing the slaves. You know, that's giving the, you know, allowing for a little, you know, bonfire on the plantation so the slaves, when they get up in arms, Miss Anne get whipped too hard, too many lashes, a little bit too much flesh is torn from Miss Anne's back and it reveals some of her rib cage. We don't like that. You went a little too far, massa, and we're going to dance around this fire and we're going to call you out your name. But, you know, when Monday morning, when the rooster crows, we'll be in that field. We'll be tending that cotton. So they understand you have to let them, because, you know, when you have an absolute monarchy, they learn that. The elites learn the lessons of history. They say those who fail to learn the lessons of history are doomed to repeat it. But that's not fully accurate. Those who learn the lessons of history oftentimes set up to deliberately repeat those, to repeat history. So if you're a monarch, if you're part of the elite, You don't, the lessons of history, you are doomed to repeat. What, my grandson's going to have the amount of power and influence and resources that I had? Why wouldn't I want to repeat that history? So those who learn the, who truly learn the history, lessons of history, do everything in their power. They do everything in their power to repeat those lessons of history. Yes, I'm having tech problems. Not on, you can go to Q4 if you're listening to me. You can go to Q4 Radio, Q4.org, Q-U-E-4, the number 4.org, and listen on the website if you're outside of the city of Chicago, or even if you're in Chicago and you have access to the worldwide internets. But I don't know why you'd be listening to me in Chicago. Chicago's a sanctuary city, so what have we to worry about in the city of Chicago? What have we to complain about? We live in a sanctuary, a utopia. Welcome to Shytopia, sanctuary city. You know, just fake a Latino accent, I suppose. Just, I don't know. I have to go over to the West Side, see how our Latinx brothers and sisters are doing. Because I know they say maybe it's not a sanctuary for everybody. Let me go over to their side of town and just see how wonderful this sanctuary city status. Or the U.S. government, Chicago's about to spend millions of dollars to defend its sanctuary status from the federal government. But anyway, let me get back to what I was saying. The lessons of history. I'm sorry about if my live listeners, all the way live, I don't know what's up with it. Like I said, it's not coming up. It's black. And it won't even let me cancel and restart. So I don't know what's the dealio. But anyway, where was I? Oh, Constitution, nothing but a piece of paper. And the lessons of history, we act like the lessons of history continue to repeat because we won't learn the lessons because we're so ignorant. We forget the past. We are forward looking. The reason history keeps repeating is because there are institutions and structures in place that are so want to repeat the history. Because the people who were elite, who dominate, who run the world, why would they not want to repeat history? And like I said, you can have all the radical ideas you want. You can go online and buy every book Amos Wilson ever wrote. You can show up to all the Black Lives Matter rallies. But if you're too hardcore for the mainstream black movement, you can go to the underground, all the little assy underground basement meetings. Pour all the libations you want and jawbone about and pontificate about what you gonna do, what you won't do. But like I said, the status quo is well stable. So they don't want to move on the radicals. They don't move on us because they don't want to make martyrs of us. They don't want to bring too much attention. So they allow us to jawbone in obscurity. And you can go to it's on YouTube, Dr. Bobby Wright and his Menticide speech, where he said, they're not paying attention to me. They're paying attention to you. They want to see what you do with what I say, how you respond to what I say. You know? And when the masses start to move, that's what they spend. And here's the thing that used to annoy me. Now, I don't hear a lot of things that I used to hear anymore. And I'm afraid that it's not because our people are awakening. I think because I'm starting to have a bubble around me. And I've done a lot to try to avoid this echo chamber that they call it, where you say something out and it comes right back to you. So I'm going to go out here and hang with the vegans, you know, pro-ecology, urban gardeners, conscious, literate, progressive, revolutionary, pan-African, pro-black, natural hair, natural body products, all that stuff. No contacts, no surgical destruction and manipulation of your features. None of that. Like everybody I hang around, I look around, I just stand there and look at my immediate social circle. I stand there and look at my friends, my community, and I'm like, wow, everything's going to be all right. See, I've tried to avoid that, but I think I'm there because I don't hear a lot of things I used to hear from black folks. And I don't know if it's because we don't think it anymore. I know that's not the case. It's just in my life, in my literal material life, and in my virtual life, social media life. I think the echo chamber, and it's not because I've done that. I don't run people off, you know, and I don't block people. Oh, I see a kind. I've been having to suffer this mad woman. She lives in California. She's utterly insane. She's pro-Trump. And she says all this pro-Trump nonsense. 99.999% of the time, I ignore it. But I mean, I don't block people that share that views or have behaviors that are contrary to what I think they should or shouldn't do. Because I don't want to live in an echo chamber. But I'm not hearing things like I used to hear. So it could lead me to a false sense that we are reaching that tipping point. We are reaching that critical mass of consciousness and awakening where people like me just might come under direct targeting of the systems and institutions of imperialism, white domination, capitalism. But I don't think that's the case. Because like I said, if you are going to marches, if you're upset about police brutality, you mad, Kaepernick didn't get a job, or whatever your anger is, what does that new awareness or that long-standing awareness that has been reawakening, whatever it is, what does that do? How does that change your day-to-day life? How does that change your relationship with the structures around you, your family members, your spouse? If there's no change, internal change, then what the hell? You can't have external change. It's as simple as that. And I know people personally who want to change the world but won't change their damn underwear. Okay, it's not really a hygiene issue. But what I mean is they won't change something personal and intimate to them. That's just a metaphor, I hope. Although I have my suspicions. And so, you won't change where you live, how you live, why you live, what you eat, how you prepare what you eat, how you secure your food, how you dress, what you think, what you feel. But you want to change the world. You want to change the economy outside yourself. You want to change the culture outside yourself. You want to change education, how we educate, how we breed and birth ourselves. You want to change everything outside yourself, but you won't change your own internal self. And I know we need change. We need revolutionary change. We need a fundamental paradigm shift. We need to totally stop living within an economic system and start to live strictly within ecological systems, which is going to require a mega massive change. But I don't see the internal change. I see way too many conscious woke people that act just like they did the day before they woke. Have a lot of the same dispositions, the same worldview, the same social theories. The same wants, needs, and desires and value systems as before. And so, until the people change, the elites have nothing to worry about. Ain't nobody about to run up on the Koch brothers. Ain't nobody going to run up on really y'all supporting Trump. This Trump thing, man. Y'all tell me. So I can jawbone. I can say bung dung Babylon, burn it all down. And then I don't even think. That's why I never say. And I see, this is something I definitely see people that is entering the lexicon and our understanding. Where more radicals are saying we have to dismantle the system. You know, because a lot of revolutionaries used to say, we need to blow up the system, burn down the system, bring down the system, destroy, smash, bang. I mean, it's like, well, your grandma is on Social Security. She needs her insulin, you know. She's on Medicare. That's all the system, you know. The water filtration and water purification, that's all the system. And so the integrationist said, just allow us to integrate into the system. And then we just ended up doing the same job, you know, as the white man. And we start acting just like white people and treating our own people just like white people treated us and treating other white people the way white people treat others. So black cops beat the hell out of blacks, abuse blacks, have a very predatory relationship towards black, and black cops treat white folks with all the dignity and respect that their slogan protect and serve. So integrating the system wasn't the thing. So then some black folks like smash the system. Then again, your auntie's food stamps won't get there on time. And so a lot of our people are dependent on the system. It's direct proportionate. As hostile and oppressive as a system, they have cultivated over centuries a deep-seated dependence. Our dependence. It's an artificial dependence. It's a dependence that they forced upon us. It's not something that we volunteered for. So if you smash that, then you're going to have great upheaval. And what you found, like I knew some brothers who will remain nameless that I was talking, and they showed me, they were like, we got these guns, we got these ex-vets and military dudes and dudes who were, you know, doing everything from engineering and logistics in the military. We about to wage war on the system. We about to go in these sewers and just start this all-out guerrilla warfare against the government. Just out of nowhere. And I said, you know, this is probably 98, 99. And so they were like, we see the work you're doing, so we know you can be trusted. And I'm like, well, you can trust me. And one thing you can trust me to do is to tell you the truth. I'm like, if you start doing this mess, what you're going to do is the people you claim to be working on behalf of, you're going to drive them deeper into the arms of the oppressor. Even white people did studies in the 70s. They did research. Dr. Bobby Wright, again, pulled up the research and stated that the U.S. government and their intelligence gathering agencies, a lot of these agencies, we like CIA, FBI, NSA. Oh, you know, we like to look at the fact they assassinate people. They got drone bombs and they do all that. They waterboard and torture people and they topple governments. Yes, they do all of that. But do you know their primary function is intelligence gathering? Look at their charters. Go to the website. You can say their primary function, the FBI, Federal Bureau of Investigations, they investigate, they look into, they paperwork. It's more paperwork. FBI agents, for every FBI agent you see in the FBI jacket with the big yellow FBI letters, toting a shotgun with the sunglasses, every CIA James Bond looking sociopath you see out there shooting people with silencers on, and aviator sunglasses looking all, you know, futuristic and Jason Bourne-y. For every one of those types you see, there's 100 Poindexter, little wimpy agents who do nothing but sit there banging out algorithms, you know, doing word searches, reviewing, you know, profiles, looking at you jack off through your device camera. Dudes you can beat up. Dudes who run from you. Dudes who step out of your way when you black man in down the sidewalk all huffed with your chest puffed out. Them dudes are the most deadly. Go look up Kermit Roosevelt, one of the deadliest CIA agents, one of the most insidious. Kermit Roosevelt, you know by his name. Kermit, that was the dude's name. Go Google the dude. You can backhand that punk. They ain't these tough dudes. That's the media. They these little Poindexters. It's paperwork. Paper gangster. And you know, I hate to say it because it's the most trite, overused, and abused, but also the most accurate statement in the history of mankind. The pen is mightier than the what? You even know it. I ain't even got to say it. The pen is mightier than, you know, the AK-47. But anyway, I was talking to these young brothers, and these are some serious cats. Some very serious cats. And they was like, we ready to take up arms. But this was some other atrocity. See, the atrocities just rained down. Everybody liked to act like Mike Brown. You know, and from Emmett Till, we just came up on Emmett Till's the anniversary of the murder, funeral of Emmett Till. Mike Brown, Emmett Till, atrocity after atrocity after atrocity after atrocity. But everybody, you know, the atrocities from 10 years, 20 years, 30 years ago, but atrocity happens in my neighborhood and next week, oh, now I'm woke. Nigga, you've got enough reference. Why this? Why you need it? You know more atrocities are coming down the line. More acquittals are coming down, more exposés. But I was telling homies, if y'all do this, y'all going to drive more people into the arms of the system. What you're going to do is validate the system if you carried out these actions that you're planning and you're equipping yourself for. And it just so happens, a year or two after that, the 9/11 strikes came. And they hit the World Trade Center. And within the World Trade Center was the local Mayor Giuliani, Adolph Giuliani, had a, whatchamacallit, he had a command center in the there. Where, and this is Giuliani, Amadou Diallo. Remember, we owned the night where he had these quality of life crimes. So it was a crime to be poor. It was a crime to be bad. And the whole stop and frisk, all this was going on. This is at the height of it. And Giuliani had came and said, white folks, you know, he was trumping long before Trump. This silly little prosecutor, this vicious little man. Skeevy little, I mean, oh, because I guess it ain't ancient history because, I mean, Giuliani did pop up under Trump. But anyway, Giuliani, way back in 99, I think he became mayor of all of the mayor, maybe 94, 95. He replaced old David Dinkins. And David Dinkins, prior to Giuliani, had tried to put checks and balances on the people. Even though Giuliani was a new Negro, he's an Uncle Tom, but like Obama, who was also a new Negro and Uncle Tom at the same time, was a competent administrator. Very competent administrator. You give them white folks, now you give them something black to manage, they run it off a cliff, but you give them white folks, this here is white folks government. This here is white folks business. They gonna handle white folks business real good because that's what they've been born and bred to do. So he was a competent administrator. He had set up a lot of things, but black, white people were feeling that, look at these black people aren't dying in the streets. That's a problem. Black people are feeling a little uppity. Black people are able to walk the streets with some level of dignity. Can't have this. Let's vote in a racist. So they voted for Giuliani. This is, you know, decades before Trump. And Giuliani said, we're going to retake the streets. We're going to own the night. And he said what he said is going to bring rain down repression on black folks. And white folks was like, thank you very much. And he's like, I don't want to hear what else. No other campaign promises. No other campaign promises. As long as you satisfy my predatory instinct to repress black folks, then I don't care what else you do. Govern as you see fit. So as he went about turning New York City into Sesame Street, into this corporate brain dead. I mean, this New York City is gone. We lost it. Gil Scott-Heron made a song called We Almost Lost Detroit. We need somebody now to make a song. We definitely lost Brooklyn. And we lost Harlem. But anyway, black folks was mad as hell at New York. Black folks was hating Giuliani. And they was like, you're repressing us. You got these cops. And the cops were going around like, yeah, we on their slogan was we own the night. And they set up curfew. They cleared out Washington Square Park. They started enforcing curfew. Because before, New York was like Amsterdam. It was a whole different, there was no place like it. Now New York is Walmart and Mickey Mouse. All corporate, dead, soulless. It's like a concentrated impact. It's like the suburbs. Well, I've always, everything you hate about the suburbs. But then 9/11 came and black folks were like, Giuliani is America's mayor. We have to rally together. And this act, this strike against the system, the institutions of power, the World Trade Center. How come the world in the Empire State and Lower Manhattan, Wall Street, black folks have been suffering under this for years. Giuliani didn't have it. He was coming up on the end of his term. And black folks was hating on New York City, was hating the government, hating the city. We was marching and we was rallying. I had even been, you know, detained. They threw the charges out. But I even got the cuffs slapped on me. And I'm not a protester. I'm a revolutionary. I don't go out there and cry to the white man about what he did and didn't do. But even they had me out in the street like, this ain't right. You know, Amadou Diallo. You know. And they had rappers and they had Hip Hop for Respect and all these rappers was coming out. And then this other new Negro, Hustle Simmons. And they were talking about, we're going to turn over the Rockefeller drug law, mass incarceration. There was this big uprising. And then, boom, 9/11. Every single one of them dudes ran out and got a USA flag. And this was when, this is Brooklyn of the 90s. Not the Brooklyn of the 2000s. And you walk down that street and the Guyanese flags were gone. The Trini flags were gone. The Jamaican flags were gone. I mean, they got little islands I don't even know. You know, a British Virgin Island. They got flags, all these little different flags from the West Indians and South Americans, Panamanian, Puerto Rican. All them flags were gone. It was all America, far as the eye could see, right or left. American flags. America's under attack. Wait, but America was attacking you. America is, so when you're an attacker, so you know, you see the girl getting abused and spat upon by her boyfriend in the club. And I've literally seen this. I've seen this. This happened. I what was that club? I think Stars on Broadway. If you're in Kansas City, you remember this. I don't even have to make up a hypothetical. This is a real incident. We was at Stars on Broadway. And that's an old club. It was a teeny bopper club for teens. I think it was 21 and under. No alcohol, but really good music. And they did everything. Stars on Broadway. Holla at anybody from Kansas City. They can tell you if they were around in the 90s, a 90s hip-hop hit. And there was a dude aggressing against his girl. I don't know if he struck her. I didn't see it because music was blaring. You know, I'm out there sniffing in behind random women. And I had a friend who was like this, just this kind of dude. We used to call him Sage. So Sage goes and intervenes. Like, man, why you up here checking your girl like that? We here trying to have a good time, man. And you know, you don't treat a woman like that. So the dude tried to pop bad with my man. And of course, my man, he had them hands. Everybody knew Sage had hands. So he two-pieced the dude, and then the girl come up from behind with a bottle or something and smash my man in the back of the head. So that's what happened. So even though New York City was the abusive boyfriend, and black folks in New York were, I mean, go look up that era. A few black people who couldn't afford to make it out. That's black when all the black New Yorkers were moving to Atlanta. And it was really sad. I was in college. I was at SUNY Downstate. And it was this girl's like, I'm getting out of here. I'm moving to Atlanta. I can't deal with New York. And you New York cats, I can't deal with you. I'm moving to Atlanta. And she moved to Atlanta and got pregnant by a New York dude. And she was like, I might as well move back to New York. You know? And so her and her New York boyfriend, they came on back. She was like, I went all the way to Atlanta just to get knocked up by a New Yorker. So black folks was running, absconding. But the moment our abuser got attacked, we rallied behind our abuser. Get off time. Even though the abuser kind of, it was a self-inflicted wound, if you ask me. I don't know. But I know what I do know. And what I do know about what I don't know is that the way they said it went down, Osama bin Laden in a cave in Afghanistan, that's some bull, as Bernie Mac used to say. That's some bull. It didn't go down that way. And I'm all for the 9/11 truth. I ain't saying I know the truth, but I know what ain't the truth. I don't know what it is, but I know what it ain't. And the 9/11 omission report ain't the truth. You know, now, I ain't even going to get into that. All I'm saying is we take up arms against the state and we don't do the necessary paperwork. And I ain't talking about no Morris sovereign citizen paperwork. What I mean is properly informing, properly getting the proper literature, education, and psychological, emotional, and intellectual awakening and transformation of our people on the front end, throwing rocks at the police car. You know, you're going to get snitched on. I mean, go watch First 48. That's the snitchapalooza. Man, black folks will tell on you. Woo, they tell. This is just, like I said, the most dangerous, deadly, aggressive institutions are intelligence agencies. They gather information. Now, I don't think information is power. Information is an asset to power. So we like to take shortcuts. We like to say information is power, so I just get a lot of information. That's not what power is. Education. Get money. Open a business. We love to take these shortcuts to liberation. Well, opening black businesses and shopping at black businesses. That'll do it. Learning about my history and dressing up like a Egyptian monarch. That'll do it. Information is not power. Because if you give information to and you sit on it, then you ain't got nothing. Information is an asset to power. But it ain't power unto itself. Knowledge is not power unto itself. Perception is not actually reality. That's just, you know, that's not a literal thing. I'm sorry. Very sorry. Anyway, we got more pertinent issues, I guess. Texas, or as the liberals call it, Texasistan, because Texas is such a, you know, I for a long time, coming up in Missouri, my entire life, I've been surrounded by the sovereignty movement. And a lot of these black sovereignty, these Morris sovereignties, Hebrew sovereigns, and all these nonsense, they don't know this, that's a white racist ideology. But like I said, there's nothing white folks can't pull out their butts that black folks won't jump into. I don't care if it's Mormonism, Jehovah's Witness, the sovereignty movement, even black Confederates. I mean, can white folks create something that we don't find some stupid idiot black person trying to wiggle into? Can we let them have something to themselves? God. Anyway, Texas is a conservative state. It's a red state. And they send people like Ted Cruz to Congress. And who's that idiot with the big hair? Rick Scott. They elect. Who's the guy who wanted to get rid of who became governor after George Bush? But they elect people like George Bush to be their governors. It's a very, very conservative state. But now they got their handout for the welfare. They want a government handout. They want to take my tax dollars. They're not taking personal responsibility and pull themselves up by their bootstraps. No, white folks, oh, Lord, send the government. President. President is a government official. Y'all want the National Guard? Well, hey, well, hell, y'all want the UN? Y'all hate the UN. Y'all hate welfare, public assistance, FEMA. The government sending FEMA to take away my rights. But here you go. Every time these conservative, anti-government white folks get in a little trouble, they got their hands out and your tax dollars will be pouring into Texas. And your public servants, Army Corps of Engineers, and not just public servants, even the private industry. Remember, let the market decide. This is a free market, free capitalist society, right? But guess what? Who gonna pay these private companies, these private contractors, these military firms that are gonna go in and shoot the looters, the black kids who are doing nothing but trying to survive? But who's gonna go out there? Who's paying them? So even when you say private industry, private enterprise, the citizens, these rednecks in Texas, these sovereign Republic of Texas who want to have another civil war so they can break from the Union of the United States because the government, the Zionist occupied, the Zionist occupied government full of Jews, full of Negroes, black folks, all right? So who pays the private contractors? The government. They still get money, so it's either you pay government employees or you pay private employees with government money. So everything the state of Texas has been against is about to come down to save Texas. And I know we got a lot of Moes and Mosettas. That's what Dr. Mackey, Professor Mackey, used to call black folks. Mo and Mosetta. So we got a lot. I know we got a lot of brothers and sisters that moved down to Texas. I don't know why. I guess Atlanta got saturated, had reached this black folks quota. So y'all, they said, keep it moving. It's enough of y'all here. But I know I got a cousin that just moved down to Texas. So there's a lot of black people that moved to Texas. But the basic culture and politics of Texas is red. And I don't know if y'all not voting. Because y'all know, y'all listening to Umar and Seti. Don't vote. Okay, I don't vote. What do I do? You tell me what not to do. What do I do? Don't be gay. Okay, I'm not gay. I don't vote. What now? Give me money for schools. You know, like, it's not really a very well thought out plan. So maybe y'all down there listening to the Umar agenda, because y'all ain't got no political clout. Y'all don't have a real political agenda, public policy agenda. Y'all have no agenda for the infrastructure. But y'all didn't do that in Atlanta. Y'all ain't took over nothing in Atlanta. I mean, to me, Atlanta just looks like a gigantic CDC laboratory. Y'all, you know, just watch strippers and ball out, buy the nicest cars, join fraternities, sororities, and megachurches. And then other than that, only thing else going on down there is CDC experimentation on black folks. I don't know. I've only been to Atlanta one time in my life, pun purpose. I didn't really want to go back, but I'll be there for the Bugs Conference. More info coming on that, the Bugs Conference. But anyway, so now Texas. And remember, here's another thing. Remember Hurricane Sandy hit New York? And see, here's the problem. You know, the Midwest, the Deep South, the Southwest, and Northeast, they're a little slow. Northwest, the Dakotas and crap, the Oregonians, they're a little slow on the uptake. So they don't know that they still see New York as a bunch of Jews and blacks trying to bring communist revolution. They see, you know, They don't really know. They still know New York from Hill Street Blues. So they don't know that New York has been Disney-fied and whitified and all whited up. It's whited up. Howled up, as my people from the Hawaiian Islands say. It's all howled up. So they, when Hurricane Sandy hit and the black president was like, we got to send aid. We got to send money. We got to rebuild New York and New Jersey and Connecticut. The Northeast with them liberals. I'm not sending no money with their hand out. They got to pull themselves up by the bootstraps. So when the projects in New York City were underwater, when the poor black folks in Jersey and the poor white folks in rural Jersey were underwater, every single Texas congressman and senator, including Ted Cruz, voted against aid money to send additional aid money to New York and New Jersey to help with the Hurricane Sandy recovery. Every single Texas. And that fat SOB, Chris Christie, the most hated governor in America, literally the lowest approval rating of any governor. And we've got some real crappy governor. We got a governor here in Drillinoy. I know it's the sanctuary city, but it's the Drillinoy state, who's literally just like an open racist piece of crap. I mean, Governor Rauner, who went, you know, his entire term without a budget. You know, without paying the government. Chris Christie is less popular than Rauner. And Rauner is just like the crappiest administrator. He ain't good at the job. They need to get another Obama in there, a black man, to get in there and fix white folks' mess. While giving false hope to black folks. Can't ask for a better deal. Man, they got a good deal. A lot of mileage out of Obama. But even Chris Christie is like running around on the media like, yo, Texas. Now that your senators and congressmen are in the government, in the Zionist-occupied government, the ZOG, asking for aid. Y'all want the National Guard. Y'all want FEMA. Y'all calling for the president, the chief executive of the government, of the oppressive ZOG and his Jew son-in-law. Y'all want them to come down there and bring aid and make promises and help us rebuild with handout and welfare. I mean, the bugger, like... Again, Mackie, the bugger got no shame. Shameless. The very state that elected people to deny public services and aid to other people in times of disaster and catastrophe is now need help. And they're going to get the help because that's how they do. That's just how these sociopaths do. These parasites do. They deny things, when they're in trouble, give us help. It ain't no different. Crack epidemic, lock them up. Opium epidemic. Oh, we need sympathy. It's a public health issue. Please, I'm going to give aid. We need counseling. These people are sick. They're not criminals. You know, it's the same thing. Same thing. Texas, white, no shame. The bugger got no shame. So Ted Cruz like, well, I voted against aid for Hurricane Sandy victims because the bill had a bunch of pork in it. None of the funds were going to go to help them. You lying sack of what? Just kill yourself. And these are people, everybody, I don't trust. The people I trust less than anybody else is Christians. I ain't even talking about Osteen. What the hell? I thought Osteen was in Atlanta. What are you even doing with a megachurch? Y'all mad because he won't open a megachurch. I'm mad because he got a megachurch. The megachurch shouldn't freaking be there in the first place. That's why I'm pissed off. Shoot, to hell with him not opening. It shouldn't exist for him to open or to not open. Shouldn't be no damn white megachurches with black congregations anywhere on this damn planet. Shouldn't be no Christian churches anywhere in the world with black attendees anyway. Shouldn't be no black Christians in the first damn place. So yeah, you know, a Christian ain't doing right by the people. Oh, whoop-de-frickin'-do. What else you expect? What else is new? Christianity been doing wrong by its followers for the last 2,000 years. Damn it. Back it up. What was I talking about? Oh, the hypocrisy of the state of Texas. And in Texas, the problem is the reason it's so bad, because even though this is what they call a 500-year flood, really it's a 1,200 or to 10,000-year flood, It's unprecedented. This is a year one flood. It's never happened before. But because it is a coastal city, because it's off the Gulf of Mexico, that is tends to be turbulent waters, like a river, turbulent water, right? There were infrastructure set up all over Texas, Tyler, Texas, and Houston. These huge reservoirs, the floodplains, they had artificial reservoirs what they called the levees. They had all this infrastructure set up to say, hey, there's going to be times where we're going to get an inordinate amount of water from hurricanes, you know, from tropical storms. You know, this is a tropical region. We think America is, you know, longitude and latitude don't give a damn about man-made borders. So they knew it. So when the city was founded and people were more civic-minded, people weren't stupid, mindless human resources, consumer machines, they would think for the future. They didn't just think about, you know, from one Mayweather fight to the next. That's the farthest head I can think. And get all. They actually said, hey, if we're going to have a society, we have to be civil. We have to be civilized. We have to be social in a society of with other people around. We have to be considerate about things. We have to be considerate of the climate and the environment. There was that level of planning and foresight. So Houston was set up initially. When the city of Houston was founded, when they started developing and setting up all that stupid infrastructure for the cattle and the oil rigs to destroy and rape the ecology of Texas and to drive out the natives of Texas, when they stole Texas from the Mexicans, who stole it from the natives, from the Aztecs and the Mayans and the Incans, and when they stole it from the Spanish, who stole it from the natives. I mean, there's been so many layers of theft and atrocities, I can't keep up. But when all that happened, I'm just saying, my main point is, at that time, they put in the proper infrastructure. Say, hey, we're going to create an obscene capitalist city with some obscene capitalist nonsense going on here. But we got to be mindful, because we can't exploit the land if we don't properly set up the infrastructure for exploitation. So they put in reservoirs. They put in ravines. They had ways to compensate for excess rain and excess heat and periods of drought and periods of deluge. They had all that set up. But then somebody had this idea like, listen, look at all this unused land. Look at all this. We could be building here. We could be making money. It's like, well, we're already making money. We got oil rigs, oil refineries. Because Texas used to be Saudi Arabia. Texas used to be the number one oil production region in the world. There's a lot of documentaries written on that. The Seven Sisters. There's a really good documentary on the oil. I think it was started off with Seven Sisters. Now it's down to 3 to 4 major oil companies. But anyway, it's neither here nor there. Monopolistic capitalism. Whatever. Free market fanaticism. But they decided, hey, we want to be. Also, in the 70s, they started this thing called the Race to the Bottom, where every state, where the government, the apparatus of the government says our job is not to properly manage the society and resources to protect the rights and well-beings of the citizens. Our job, the job of the government, is to facilitate enterprise, to facilitate the market, to help people make money and get rich. That was the job. That was the new role of the job, you know. And then it went into hyper mode after the fall of communism, because capitalism didn't have to pretend to have a humane face anymore. So what happened? They removed the zoning laws. And then they said, we're going to lower taxes. Going to have the lowest taxes. No taxes. Don't pay the government. No taxes. Taxation is theft. Taxation is theft. And then you got a lot of stupid ass black people that go along with that. Taxation is theft. Oh, shut up. Shut your ass. If you're a black person and you think taxation is theft, boy, you stole. Everything in this country is stolen. What are you talking about? You're theft. Somebody stole your ass. What the hell are you talking about stealing your money? You're stolen property, idiot. Correct that. You know? What the hell? I don't. But anyway, profit is theft. Anyway, what? So anyway, they lowered taxes. They stopped, the government stopped investing so much in infrastructure. And then the worst thing they did is they totally just got rid of all the zoning laws. And I know, I have been a victim of zoning laws as an eco-socialist entrepreneur. So you can be a socialist and entrepreneurial. But I don't open business for strictly profit. And I don't take profit from my businesses. I only take earnings. I only take what I earn. I don't exploit the labor of my co-workers, co-owners. It's a thing. It is a thing. And we can get more into that. So you can still be entrepreneurial. I know black folks, you know, like to, you know, we have really got this thing. We really get off on black businesses. You know, we just masturbate to black business. I don't know. It's black business. Buy black. I don't know where this came from. I don't know where it came from, and I don't know where it's going. It's just around in a circle, digging our own graves by running rapidly in a circle. Anyway, it's another discussion. They removed the zoning laws. So all those floodplains, because you don't really know. If you're in an area where there's a floodplain, and you're not really a surveyor, or you're not really a civil engineer, it just looks like a park to you, empty space, some trees. It's empty land. That's how I look. A floodplain or a reservoir in the dry season or most of the year or even in the rainy season. You're like, look at all this. It's just a park. It's just empty space. And you can't make profit off of trees and air, fresh air and just empty space and grasslands. How, and who's making a buck? Got to make money. So humans, a billion years of evolution has come up to the sum total of, God, I mean, how do you make money and accumulate and hold on to a whole bunch of fiat? So they started building houses and developments and hotels and businesses, and they just started building it on and say no more. And like I said, as a socialist entrepreneur, I've run into, so we wanted to open a cafe and we found this nice little house and we were like, we could convert this house, and they were like, it's not zoned for commercial. It's like, well, yeah, but it's an empty house, and you know, we talk to the people in the community and we try to talk to the alderman, all this. We ended up finding another space, but you know, they were like, this place is, you can't put businesses here, you can't build residential areas here, you can't, there's certain areas that are zoned, you can't build anything, you can't build any permanent structures, you can have some temporary structures. But some places, you can't even put temporary structures. That's zoning. Saying this is zone commercial, this is zone residential, this is for non-development, open use, shared use, common space, private space, where there's certain areas that no matter how much money, you can't buy it. It's publicly held infrastructure. It's not for sale in the private. Texas said, to hell with all that. Make this money. Ain't ish funny. Ain't no way you could take this from me. Texas, like, we about that money. Money, paper, paper, money, paper, money, paper. That's why, you know, when all them Texas, what's his name? Boss Hog. And Mike Jones. When all them, and the Ghetto Boy. All them Texas rappers. Not that. Ghetto Boys is more. But not them. But the Diamond Age. When Texas rappers came on the scene. Pimp C and Bun B. They called that the Diamond Age because them Texas boys were so flossy. Them Texas boys had them donks. Now, it wasn't no 20-inch rims. They were putting like 60, and they had like literally blinged out monster trucks because they came from that culture. They came from that culture of gaudy. It's big Texas. With the Lone Star State, everything is big in Texas. So the black folks was looking at these white folks, and that's what most black folks do, especially if they're not Pan-African, if they're not conscious, if they're not revolutionary, they're just a pale imitation of the pale man. Or really, it's a dark imitation of the pale. Whatever. You see my point? That's all I'm saying. So, when you look at that, black folks came out of Texas and brought Texas rap, Texas hip-hop, that southern culture. And they brought that to the rest of it. Everybody's like, man, they do it big in Texas because Texas is all about money. Texas is not about preserving the ecosystems. It's not about having zoning and proper planning. So disaster, what would have been a disaster, is now a catastrophe. Now it's an absolute catastrophe. When it was simply before, could have been a disaster. Because they built all this infrastructure. You got homes that are underwater. I'm not saying flooded, completely submerged from the rooftop. Underwater. And they're going to remain underwater for at least a month or two because the homes were built in a reservoir. And they were built in a reservoir because the state of Texas and the city officials in Houston said that we will not have any zoning laws. If you come up with an idea that can make money, then you can do it. And we will not regulate you. Remember, they hate regulation, government regulation. Trump's trying to do that with the federal level. And you even got black folks who don't have no business, don't control no resources, don't own any infrastructure, talking about regulations. Regulations don't even, the only regulation that apply to your dumb ass is street crossing signs and speed limit. You know, them the only regulations, because you ain't got nothing. The regulations are for people who own stuff. And don't tell me about your little condo or your little house that you own, your two little Section 8 properties that you're slumlording over. I ain't talking about that. I'm talking about people that own massive infrastructure. I'm talking about people like Trump. They got billions of dollars and hectares of property that they control. And you up there representing their interests, thinking you up there with them because you got a little Section 8 property that your grandma left to you. That you're getting a few dollars off of it. You think you're a real estate mogul, dumbass. So now you even got black folks. I don't like the government regulations, and taxation is theft. And now taxation is theft. So I would like every Texas Republican to refuse any government aid. Just get you some scuba gear, pull yourself up by your own bootstrap, go to Home Depot, go to the sports arena, get you some scuba gear, go to the Home Depot and buy some buckets and go bail out your own damn house with your own damn resources, with your own two hands as a sturdy, hardworking, God-fearing American. Don't take no government handouts. So when the National Guard comes, say I won't get in the boat, I'll swim to shore with my own two arms because I'm self-sufficient. Damn hypocrites. There's some damn hypocrites. Not one cent of tax dollars should go to help any Republican voter. And all the homes built in the floodplain shouldn't do a damn thing. You rolled the dice, now pay the price. Because if there are no real consequences, they're going to go right back because that's what they did in Louisiana. Louisiana, the hurricane shifted. They went and turned Louisiana into Disneyland, kicked all the black folks out, and then again say, hey, this is a free market. And it's not free market. That's such a lie. I had some stupid Negro on there talking about free market. Capitalism. And the black people talking about capitalism is like a cow talking about the damn meat industry. You can't be a capitalist because you're the capital. You are the human resources. You are the resource. The resource can't be in the business. You are the business, dumbass. It's like cows sitting around, you know, we got to be responsible. We should buy into beef futures. Own some stock. You know, like what the hell are you talking about? Any minute now, they're going to come around and cut your damn head off and throw you into the meat grinder. Even if the better that the system does, the worse it is for you. Anyway, let me go. It's Fred Hampton Day. I don't know. What should we celebrate the birth? Should we reflect on the loss? How do you really observe Fred Hampton Day? I don't know. We're going to take a musical break. Bro Diallo Show, Q4 Radio. Thank you for being with me. And this is Civilization versus Technology. We had way back in 1991, we had people trying to tell us about this. Ecological ecology rap, but we didn't listen. We're not listening.
We can survive.
Before we die, we must save the earth. Man must put down cruelty. We must not fear. We must save the earth. Then we may live life.
I don't wanna see a fear. I don't wanna see. I don't wanna see a fear.
Wake up! This is not a plea, but more a demand. A lot of people don't know what I'm talking about, but it affects us all, no doubt. So let me start with the ozone layer. Earth is finished, 'cause there'll be nothing to protect us when the ultraviolet radiation. gonna stand again? How can you cut down trees if this is the way we breathe? Trees suck up the carbon dioxide and give air so we can survive. Carbon dioxide is heating up the earth. Again, it's death, not birth. First there's a hole in the atmosphere, then you cut the trees that cool the air. Every nation, and it's this organization, controls the media stations. We have the answer to the next generation, from radiation to contamination. So wake up, this affects us all. When the world empires fall, what are the ramifications to an economic, industrial nation? Do we die by their hand, or do we organize and take a stand?
Drop counts. You can laugh and take it as a joke if you wanna, but it don't rain a full week some summers, and it's about to get real wild in the half. You be buying every yarn just to take a fucking bath. Heads is acting wild, sipping rum, puffing dank, competing with the next man for higher playing rank. So I ain't got time, try to be Big Hank. Fuck a bank, I need a 20-year water tank. Cause while these knuckleheads is out here sweating their goods, the sun is sitting in the treetops, burning the woods. And as the flame from the blaze get higher and higher, they say don't drink the water, we need it for the fire. New York is drinking it, new world. Now all of California is drinking it, new world. Way up north and down south is drinking it, new world. Used to have minerals and zinc in it, new world. Now they say it got lead and stink in it, new world. Fluorocarbons and monoxide push the water table lopside. Used to be free, now of course you will feed. Cause all tanks filling over. They roll across the sea. Man, you gotta cook with it, baby, clean with
that's
it.
Right.
When it's hot summertime, you fiend for
that's
it.
No.
You gotta put it in the iron, you steaming
that's
with.
Right.
That's what they dress wounds and treat diseases
shout
with.
It out.
The rich and poor, black and white got need for
that's
it.
Right.
And everybody in the world can agree with
that.
Consumption promotes health and easiness.
That's
go
right.
Too long without it on this earth and you leaving
shout it out.
Americans wasting it on some leisure
say
shit.
Word.
Another nation be desperately seeking that. Bacteria washing up on they beaches.
Say
don't drink the water so they can't wash they feet with
let
it. Young babies in perpetual need these days. Epidemics hopping up the petri
let
dish. Control centers try to play all secret
it.
To avoid public panic and freakiness.
Let
there are
know.
Places where TB is common as TV. Cause foreign based companies go and get greedy. The type of cats who pollute the whole shoreline have it purified and
sell it for $1.25.
Now the world is drinking it.
New
your mom's wife and baby girl is drinking it.
New world.
North and down south is drinking it.
New world.
You just
water.
Have to go to your sink for it.
New
the
world.
Cash
water.
Registers is going to chink for
world.
It.
New world.
Pearl carbons and monoxide. Got the fish looking cockeyed. Used to be free, now of course you a feed. Cause it's all about getting that cash.
Money.
Said it's all about getting that cash.
Money.
Said it's all about getting that cash.
Money. Said it's all about getting that cash.
Money, then it's all about getting your cat.
Money, then it's all about getting that cat.
Money,
then it's all about getting that cat.
Money,
then it's all about getting that cat.
Money,
then it's all about getting that cat.
Money,
then it's all about getting that cat.
Money,
Johnny cat.
Money,
Roseanne cat.
Money,
give me cat.
Money,
Cole cat.
Money,
Johnny cat.
Money,
Roseanne cat.
Money,
give me cat.
Money,
cat.
Money, cat. Cash rule everything around me. Move.
children play with Earth. Ow! Oh!
Take that of the big but small Earth around you. Dig your hands into the dirt. The dirt that made you. Get acquainted with the Earth. The Earth that eventually will take you. And the world that hopefully will again awake you. Children. Play in the fields. Play in the grass. Climb Mr. Tree. Get to know each branch. Give it a name. For the branches resemble the many decisions you will have to make in life. Eat of the earth, children. Grow an apple tree. Taste the apples. Communicate. Watch and listen to the neglected mother of all. Short and tall, children. Play with earth.
The voice of Chairman Fred Hampton.
We always say to Black Panther Party that they can do anything they want to us. We might not be back. I might be in jail. I might be anywhere. But when I leave, you can remember I said with the last words on my lips that I am a revolutionary. And you're going to have to keep on saying that. You're going to have to say that I am a proletariat. I am the people. I'm not the pig. You've got to make a distinction. And the people are going to have to attack the pigs. The people are going to have to stand up against the pigs. That's what the Panthers are doing. That's what the Panthers are doing all over the world.
We have brought to trial here Fred Hampton. You are here to judge between two conflicting testimonies. Somebody is lying. Now, reason stands. Reason is very clear here. That Private Jones, who had come from Sanford, North Carolina, would have no great desire to see Fred Hampton up in this trial. But Fred Hampton, a key figure in this community, has great reason for not wanting to be put in jail.
But the state's attorney and the state's attorney's office has reasons to see Fred Hampton in jail. We've got a new state's attorney, you see. And he said already what he thought about people that had different political beliefs than he has. His speeches sound somewhat like those of Hitler, and we know why he wants to see Fred Hampton put in jail. Why do I have a lot of arrests? Because of harassment. Why is that harassment? Because the people that harassed me have set up a problem that made me disagree with them violently, and they set up this problem in order to exploit me and other people like me. And why they want to get rid of me, because I'm saying something that might wake up some other exploited people and some other oppressed people, and if all these people ever get together, then these pigs that are exploiting us, we'll be able to run them into the lake. That's why they want to get rid of us. And it's just, it's sort of like a primary thing with me. I'm the first move that they'll make. I'm a part of an organization that will be the first organization they'll move on, because I happen to be a part of an organization, the Black Panther Party, that is the only organization, in fact, that has came out and stood up loud and clear and said that we don't care what anybody says, whether they have guns or not, and badges or 18 uniforms, if whenever they step outside the bounds of legality into the bounds of illegality, then we'll blow their brains out if they're bothering the people. Right. And what makes them mad about that? They're constantly bothering the people. Anybody that's out there for the protection of the people happens to be in direct conflict with them. What makes them mad about it? What makes them mad about it is that they have black people and white poor people and red poor people and Puerto Rican poor people and Latin American Puerto Rican people of poor people of all descents. They had them caught up in their movements based on racism when the Black Panther Party stood up and said that we don't care what anybody says. We don't think you fight fire with fire best. We think you fight fire with water best. We're going to fight racism, not with racism, but we're going to fight with solidarity. We said we're not going to fight capitalism with black capitalism, but we're going to fight it with socialism. We stood up and said we're not going to fight reactionary pigs and reactionary state attorneys like this and reactionary state attorneys like Hanrahan with any other reactions on our part. We're going to fight their reactions with all of us people to get together and have an international proletarian revolution.
Right on.
And that's saying all power to the people.
Right on.
That's saying that no matter what color you are, there's only two classes. And that's saying there's a class over here and there's a class over there. And the reason that this class over here has never did anything to get this class off its back, because this is lower, this is upper. This is the oppressed, this is the oppressor. This is the exploited, this is the exploiter. And these people in this class have divided themselves. They say, I'm black and I hate white people. I'm white and I hate black people. I'm Latin American and I hate hillbillies. I'm hillbillies and I hate Indians. So we're fighting amongst each other. And you've heard the testimony of pigs here. You got pigs of all colors. You know that. You got pigs that are white. You got pigs that are black. You even got pigs that are black and white. Propagating the same type of madness that this buffoon Henry had would be propagating if he were here himself. And why? Because they want to keep you to believing that I'm your enemy, and that everybody else that's black and that wears a lot of hair on his head and hair on his face, they want to keep you thinking that he's your enemy. Why? Because if ever you would disregard him and overlook him just for a minute and throw away that question of racism and started to dealing with a little logic, then there would be no one else you could attack other than Hanrahan, other than Daly, and other than Tricky Dicky Nixon. If you make the right decision, then the oppressed people of the world will get complete satisfaction. I know you return a verdict of not guilty. Thank you.
All right, that was a short excerpt from Chairman Fred Hampton, breaking down class, race, division. I mean, what more can I say? I don't even need to follow that up. I mean, who needs to follow anyway? Today is the birthday of our late great Chairman Fred Hampton, straight out of Chicago. There will be a ceremony. I'm sorry, I don't have that info. If you can go to my Facebook. Oh, here's another thing that you probably don't know because y'all don't go. But if you did try to, my website is down right now. Having issues with the hosting, one-in-one hosting. They say I owe them some money that I don't think I need to owe. I'm trying to work that out. If I had the money, I would just pay it. But I can't, you know, I can't pay money that I actually owe. They want me to pay up money that I don't even owe. So anyway, I'm trying to, you know, get some things. And this is the time I'm trying to get RRTV off the ground so we can have a television show. But hey, if the people get behind Bro Diallo's show, then the Bro Diallo show will continue to exist and grow. If not, then I'll go do something else. You know, I don't know, enter the strongman competition or something. I don't know, find something else to do with my time, because if this ain't something people want to get behind, then what can I say? I can't go like Fred Hampton. I can't go against the will of the people. It's up to y'all, you know, because I don't think, you know, I got any corporate sponsorship coming down the line anytime soon. So if the people don't support me, then we're done here. But that's another discussion. I'm trying to be optimistic. Today is Fred Hampton Day, one of the greatest revolutionary organizers and thinkers of this generation and most other previous generation, who was murdered by the Chicago Police Department and the Federal Bureau of Investigation through their COINTELPRO program. And they also had a lot of black assistance within the Panther Party and within the black community to help to collect data, collect information, follow stock, and eventually neutralize Fred Hampton, because Fred Hampton was resonating with the people. It's not that Fred Hampton was the first person to do class and racial analysis and to call for revolutionary uprising and to stand for the people. He wasn't the first and he wasn't the last, but he was one who was able, more so than almost any other organizer in our generation, resonate with the people. You know, it was said that even the Black Panther larger leadership was a big concern. The same thing with George Jackson. A lot of times when you have these organizations that start to develop a cult of personality around the leader, don't free Dr. York. Keep him. Keep Dr. York. But yes, rest in power, Khalid Muhammad, and rest in power, Fred Hampton. But y'all can keep Dr. York. I mean, I'm all for free everybody, but some white folks, sometimes you got to throw the whole Negro away. Anyway, as I was saying, it happens also with the Nation of Islam. When you have these organizations, that's another thing I think about black organizations, especially revolutionary. If you're a revolutionary organization, as far as Sierra Leone, I'll have that info up today. I'm actually having a meeting about that this evening to check on that progress. We did a show last Friday. But again, my website is down, and I was in St. Louis. And St. Louis, I was in Kansas City, and I have to do some reporting. I have to discuss with y'all. This is going to be eventually written up and published, but y'all can get an inside track on the work we're doing on researching urban agricultural projects and sustainability projects around the Midwest, and we'll be in the South later in the year. But right now, our main focus is the Midwest, Detroit, Kansas City, St. Louis, Milwaukee, and surrounding areas. But anyway, one of Fred Hampton's most famous and most often repeated quotes was, "You can kill the revolutionary, but you can't kill revolution." And I think that a large part of Chicago's problems in particular and black people's problems in general was the fact that they did actually kill the revolutionaries. Now, whenever people come to me with this, "What's wrong with black people?" There's only black people. We only have one problem. And if you can identify a problem that does not come out of this core problem, that is independent of this core problem and detached from this core problem, then I'll say we have two problems. But we only have one problem, and that's the fact that we're under oppression. White people oppress us. And there's not one place you can go. There's not one area on the face. It's like Dr. Bobby Rice said, anti-blackism is the world's only universal ideology. You can go to Bangladesh. You can go to the Ukraine or Russia. You can go to South Korea or even North Korea. You can go to Okinawa, places where you won't, people have never probably seen a black person outside of media. And they will be like, "Yeah, niggas are lazy." They know the line. "We're criminals. We're lazy. Rape. Don't take care of our kids." Run the line. And you could have a pedophile, white, rapist, welfare recipient, and he'll sit there and tell you about how black people are no good. So we're under this blanket of oppression. And every other problem, psychological, economic, social, everything, grows up out of the state of oppression. Or not directly as a result of our inappropriate assessment and our inappropriate response to oppression. Everybody has had the bite of oppression. I can't think of one group that hasn't felt the sting of oppression. I tell you all the time, when Europeans reached the shores of Africa, when they made it to the Caribbean, the Arawaks and Kalinagos who came out to greet them with mangoes and coconuts, when they reached the exotic lands of the spice route of Asia, India, and all that, the exotic East, they already knew how to oppress, enslave, colonize, because they've been doing it to each other. And the late Dick Gregory said that somebody got to be the nigga. And when he said, the moment black folks stood up and said, "We're not going to be your nigga no more," they started shooting each other. Look, he was talking about Kent State. He's like, they're going to, the white woman had to be the nigga. Poor whites had to be crippled. Everybody had to play it's just something about this culture, this people. They need somebody to be under their boot. So that's nothing unique. Now, depending on the culture that they encountered, when they went to the Middle East, they set up the protectorates. They didn't do colonization the same way they did it in Africa. They didn't do it the same way they did it in China. But if we read The Iceman's Inheritance, we are to accept William Bradley anthropological research and his analysis and conclusions. This culture, or you ain't got to go back to Bradley from the 70s. You can come up to the 2000s. You could talk to Derek Jensen. Because whenever I talk about white folks, I like to refer to white folks. I don't like to, even though I think Dr. Marimba Aini analysis is good, excellent, damn near flawless. But you know, for legitimacy, I like to go white folks. It takes one to know one. And, you know, that's something I was raised on. It takes one to know one. So I like to go Derek Jensen, like the culture has a death urge or whatever analysis that they have. We know this is the state. So all of our problems where Fred Hampton say, "You can kill the revolutionary, but you can't kill revolution." They did kill the revolutionary. And even though it doesn't kill our fervor, we're still pro-black. We're still got cultural enclaves, pro-black schools, black people trying to do enterprise and business, black people trying to strive and do better, sisters wearing their natural hair and brothers getting their RBG tattoos, whatever the manifestation of our consciousness is, our cultural awareness, our unity is, you can distort revolution. You can derail or misdirect revolution. So now we have more black consciousness. We never had higher rates of literacy, higher rates of interconnectivity. We never had more black doctors, black engineers, black MBAs, black professionals. I was just in Sag Harbor. My son and I, my oldest son and I, we took a road trip, our first road. You know, he's getting older. He'll be in the 10th grade. He just turned 15. So I figured, might as well do like a long cross-country road trip with my boy. I never did that, you know, with my father. I never even cohabitated with my father. So a lot of firsts for me and my son that I didn't get to do a lot. Did almost everything, eating dinner with my son. But anyway, I was in Sag Harbor. And guess what's happening to wealthy multimillionaire black people in Sag Harbor? They're being gentrified. I was on this private beach. You know, and I'll get back to the point. I was on this private beach. And a wealthy black lady was just telling me, you know, I was there with my cousin and my son. They were in the water. I don't get in the water. I'm not really a water dude. I was born and raised in Kansas City. Landlocked. I'm a landlubber. Sue me. I don't mess with water. Call it stereotype, whatever. But anyway, they out in the Atlantic Ocean. I'm back up on the beach enjoying the sun. Sister tells me, just giving me a look, because I guess she could look at me and tell me I wasn't from around them parts. So she say there were these immaculate homes. Where you had these beautiful homes with these beautiful sculpted backyards, and then there's a small downstep, and you're literally, your backyard is the beach. Your house backs right up to the beach. And these beautiful sailboats, I mean, just wonderful scenery. Go to my Instagram, at Diallo Kenyatta, go to my Instagram. I took a few pictures. I don't know how many of them I posted, but I'm like just breathtaking. Even an old, you know, grimy city dude, Southside, Chicago, grimy dude. You know, just lived just off Prospect, Kansas City, 75th Monroe. Just an old grimy dude like me. Even I could be like, wow, that's beautiful. Breathtaking. And then the sun was setting. And on the Atlantic Ocean, I've been to the Pacific Ocean. I've been to the Atlantic Ocean. It's just breathtaking. And she was telling me about how all these homes were some of the first wealthy black folks. They went all the way out to Sag Harbor and what they call it, Nantauk or Montauk Village or whatever. Because black folks couldn't buy in certain areas. So black people went out to neglected areas, unoccupied areas, affluent blacks, because I knew this one Haitian architect. I knew his son, his daughter. We were both members of the Park So Flu Co-op. And she used to spend her summers out in the affluent areas. And her father was a Haitian architect and his brother was a Haitian doctor. First generation, wealthy, affluent, educated black folks. And guess what? They're losing those properties to white folks. They gentrifying black millionaires, y'all. And I know y'all follow the gossip sites. You know, there was just some celebrity that had to sell their mansion for, I think, Drake or, I don't know, Kim Kardashian and Kanye West. You hear about celebrities when they get foreclosed on or when these rich celebrities have to sell their house. I think Jordan was famously had to sell his customized Jordan Temple mansion with all the 23s and Jumpman everywhere. He sold that for like half of what he paid for it, and he was trying to sell it for all this money because he thought maybe a collector. I guess he wasn't as popular with folks with real money as he is popular with folks with little money. But you don't hear about the black business magnates, the black publishing magnates, the black physicians and dentists, and the black MBAs and the wealthy black lawyers. A lot of black people who are wealthy but don't have any celebrity status. And you don't see. And here's another thing about wealthy black folks. They don't talk about their trials and tribulations. I know us poor black folks, we like, oh, I'm struggling. Oh, it's hard out here. And we listen to music to talk about our hardships. And we wear clothes at some time, 40 and a blunt, all I really want. We wear our pain and struggle. You know, it is struggle. To be black is to struggle. But, you know, the black bourgeoisie, E. Franklin Frazier, if you look at Kwame Ture, who also wrote Class Struggle in Africa, you know, or you even look at the book, The Warmth of Other Suns, that touch on affluent black suffering. Because black folks, and I'm out here rubbing elbows with black people who could buy and sell me a million times over. Wealthy blacks. And I'm not out there asking for money because Claude Anderson told us 20 years ago that wealthy blacks don't donate to black causes. They give to Jewish cause. They can give to Jewish causes. They can even give to Palestinian causes. The Nigerian elites, the Nigerian billionaires, you read Samuel Cotton's book, Holy Terror. I know it's a decade old, but I'm pretty sure it's consistent from what I see. The Nigerian wealthy and the African wealthy give more money to Palestinian cause. The moneyed interest give more money to Palestinian refugees than they do to African internally displaced refugees. So they don't give to black causes. So I wasn't out there asking for money. I was out there trying to make some connections and trying to commune with some of my relatives. And they are suffering. And we can't say, well, they can buy whatever they want. They can go wherever they want. But when you have money like that, when you've had a few decades of being wealthy, money is not really your issue. Money ain't a thing. Like, you know, switching fold lanes, drop top. Money's not the issue with them. They're still human beings. Even though you have all the money, you have emotions, you have psychology, you have a mind, and you have other needs besides your material needs are completely met. But then you have societal needs. When you have that kind of money, you also want to have social standing. You want a certain level of recognition. You want to be able to navigate spaces. So when they're going and coming from France and they have to go through customs, like when Oprah was in that purse shop about to drop 10, 20 G's on a purse without blinking. And that white girl was like, what's this housekeeper doing in here trying to buy this purse? Anyway, I got a call. Let me take this call real quick. You're on the Bro Diallo Show live and direct. State your name and alias and where you're calling from. Or alias. Name or alias.
Brother, this is the mother of one of your green team, Sister Lena, just calling to shout you and Sister Erica and Brother Charles out for all the work you do with our youth.
Hey.
And just to let you know, brother, you are on fire this morning.
Oh,
my
thank
God.
You.
I was driving your green team to school and just shaking my head, nodding in agreement with everything you laid out about Texas and how the lack of regulations is what we're witnessing the results of.
Well, we don't like regulations. Oh, we want free enterprise, market fundamentalism. We don't want no stinking regulations.
Right, right, you know. And see, here's why I believe the people are railing against the pastor pimps and stuff down there. Because they encourage their congregations to vote for politicians who deregulate everything. And who let these big, greedy people build anywhere and destroy the environment and do all kinds of crazy stuff that has led to this astronomical suffering that we're witnessing now with this flooding.
But if we deregulate and let the multimillionaire and billionaire developers build anywhere and violate any type of ecologic or even societal codes and norms, then a rising tide race, because so then their wealth will trickle down on us. You don't understand economics, sis. That's your problem.
Well, it's been trickled down so much, brother,
that we drowning.
it's up to the people's neck. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So, you know, we are hopefully going to see an awakening of some of them at least.
I'm sorry, but that's not how.
Some are going to abandon the pimp preachers, please, something. I mean, at the very least, they will start to attempt to use some logic in determining who are better candidates
That's not how it works. No, seriously, when people, I mean, you know, people much smarter than me and you put together got a whole bunch of letters before and after their name, Dr. So-and-so certified, PPDREK. They have studied this, and they found that crisis, when people are in a state of extreme crisis, they reduce to an infantile state. They become, that's why the churches, you know, most people that are religious, they are religious because of two reasons. They were introduced to it as a child and intensely indoctrinated, or as adults, they went through some type of trauma. And when you go, because you got your cerebral cord, you have your rational mind, then you have your reptilian brain, you know. And in your reptilian brain, when your body is exhausted and hyper stressed, you're very vulnerable to suggestion. That's why these girls, runaway girls, fall into these pimps, and these runaway Negroes fall into these churches. Anybody that'll give you a good song. So what's going to happen is most people are going to be further entrenched to wherever they were. So if they were anti-government and they're going to say, well, they're going to, this is God's will, God's accomplished. We're letting transgender people use their women's bathroom. That's God's. So they're not going to be rational about this. I could be wrong. I wish everything I said on this show was absolutely wrong. But
then we have to just, you have a point there. And if that is indeed the case, then, you know, we just have to disconnect, you know. I mean,
I know it's a, look at the stock market.
Sorry, but, you know, I'm going to stop stressing about it because people are choosing their fate when they choose to remain ignorant and not expand.
Right.
You know, they're
well, it's not really a choice, but it's not a choice. But, you know, just look, I always look at the stock market. Like, I knew this Obamacare wasn't going to be nothing because I was like, well, the health stock and the pharmaceutical stocks are going up. So it's not a real reform. It's just preservation of the status quo. You see, the stock market was on, you know, shaky ground when it wasn't declining. When Trump was in North Korea, when the storm hit, stock immediately, the market went up 40 points. And it's on a steady incline as we speak right now because they are rubbing their hands. You know, Naomi Klein said it, disaster capitalism. So if you are a carpetbagger, you need to, if you want to get paid, just pack up whatever you got and head down to Texas stand, you know, with the Red Wing, they're about to further deregulate. We don't have time for regulation. We don't have time for government. We've got to rebuild. Even Trump's about to be that. And Trump's about to, you know, it's about to be Trump-palooza, Trump hotels, Trump, you know, porta potties, everything. Everybody's about to get paid off of other people's misery, you know.
It's a disgrace. It's
so
a
don't
disgrace.
Think that people are going to be like, oh, we need to be more ecological. We need to be more responsible. We have to have competent regulation, and we need to reinstitute zoning laws so that we can, you know, construct a city that is more resilient to, you know, coming. Has anybody said climate change, global warming? Has the corporate media even mentioned global warming? You know?
Not to my knowledge. So,
I don't think this is going to be an awakening.
Any C-SPAN or any of the MSNBC or anybody really talking about this right now when this is clear evidence that, hey, we need to really be paying attention to this, you know?
Mm-mm.
We need to be paying attention to our ecological choices and stuff.
Look what they did in Louisiana after Katrina. That's what's about to happen. Look what they did in Brooklyn after Hurricane Sandy. This is disaster capitalism. I'm going to have to share some excerpts from that for Friday's show from Naomi Klein. So y'all see, you know, read John Perkins, Economic Hitman and Disaster Capitalism. That's what's about to go down here. And just look at the stock market and look at the type of companies that are going up and all the private contractors that are coming into their military and construction. The market fundamentalism is about to go into play. They're rubbing their heads together.
So it's kind of like how, you know, they start a war in a foreign country and then they profit off of that by sending private contractors in to rebuild.
Yes.
So now they're just, like, intentionally allowing disasters to happen so that they can do exactly the same thing, and that's really pitiful.
Right. And watch the gas pumps here. It's going to affect us here, too. You know, gas is about to go up. Heating oil.
Oh, yeah.
And all fossil fuels are about to skyrocket, and not because of the shortage, because of the speculation. Because of the speculation. Speculators are buying up futures right now. I mean, I might have to do a whole show on this. I mean, the people are about to get paid off of this. The capitalism seeks to profit off of problems, not to solve problems. So they already, you know, the melting of the polar caps. They're already like, oh, we can go up there and mine for gold and fossil fuels in the polar regions, in the Arctic Ocean. They're trying to profit off of global warming. The very people who denied that it exists, they're putting apparatus in place right now to profit from something they say isn't even real. And the masses of the people, they'll just put on another Mayweather fight and this will all be done away with.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll forget.
And one more thing about Sag Harbor. Ironically, Oprah on her channel, the OWN channel, she did a she aired a documentary of the black people speaking about what you're talking about. And in fact, one of them was the chef. I can't think of the sister's name, but she's the one with Alzheimer's. She's a real popular, famous chef. It was her and her husband. They were one of the couples that were profiled, and they were all speaking of how it's being gentrified.
They gentrifying black millionaires. We thought gentrification was a poor thing. You know,
no, baby, and dig this: racial profiling ain't for the poor either, because the whites that are moving in are calling the police on the kids.
Hey,
bikes to the beach or whatever, and the whites calling the police, having their kids harassed, and it's just ridiculous.
It's a damn shame. Like Puff Daddy said, I ain't got to talk it because I lived it. I went to Sag Harbor with my son, and I wanted my son to see. I'm like, look, this is how the other side lived. You didn't live. He was born in Brooklyn, came up in Kansas City and Chicago. I'm like, but there's another side to life. It ain't all this concrete and grit. And I took him out there to see the Sag Harbor wineries and all that stuff. And it was late one evening. And there's a main strip in Sag Harbor right over where they dock all the big, beautiful boats, right? And him and his little cousin, my son's 6'2". You know what it's like to have a giant kid, a giant monster kid.
Oh, yes,
I got a giant monster.
Yes,
right. So my son is 6'2", but he's only 15. And he's his little cousin. They were like, we want to walk over there. They got this little shop there, and we want to go over there and look around and look at the boats. And a sister from there was like, you can't send those black boys over. This is, ain't a house over there. They got shoe boxes. It's $15 million. Them houses are crazy expensive. And it ain't a Negro out there with less than a PhD and $1 million in their bank account. You know.
That's doggone right.
Ain't a Negro out there driving anything less than a BMW. And they told my son and his little black Afro, nappy Afro cousin that they can't be walking the streets of Sag Harbor after sundown. And the most affluent.
And it did not used to be like that.
I might as well take him back to South Chicago. I might as well bring him on back home. What's the point of even going to Sag Harbor? So it's black folk.
Right.
I'm telling you. That's what I'm saying.
You cannot buy your way to freedom, black people. It's just not.
But that's not an issue because they don't want freedom. Can you buy a Coach bag? Can you buy a convertible Mercedes Benz? Can you buy a white woman? You know, I'm saying this thing. They don't want freedom. You know what I'm saying? So ain't no argument there. Okay, can't buy freedom. I ain't shopping for freedom. They don't sell freedom at the Gucci store anyway. You know?
And then look, brother, on the documentary that aired on Oprah's channel, the way that our black people is trying to combat the problem is by hosting these little dinner party where they invite the new white folks over to their house.
Yeah.
So that learn that the black is not going to rub off on them, and that, you know, they are good Negroes and this and that and all that.
Yeah. And they are. They're not just good Negroes.
They're still calling the police on their ass.
Yeah. Yeah. I drove to New York. I rented a car to drive to Sag Harbor. I had a little Nissan Versa, but it had Texas license plate, right? The family that hosted me and my son as we were in Sag Harbor said that we had went out because I went to get me a pumpernickel bagel with some vegan non-dairy cream cheese at the little bagel shop. And when I came back, they told me the police were scanning my car. Said a police car, Sag Harbor police, some old, you know, Gomer Pyle type stuff, came up and ran my plates and all of this, being profiled, you know, and I wish I saw the cop. I would have told him, listen, poor criminals only prey on other poor people. They ain't got enough sense to come rob y'all rich folks. I don't know. They be out there snatching and stealing from other poor folks. Y'all ain't got. But yeah, it's true. But I guess you got to get money. You got
to
get money.
Rich black people can't come together to make sure that their own police departments have people who have sensitivity training and blah, blah, blah. I mean, I don't understand. I don't understand. It's just crazy.
Yeah. You're right. I'm telling you, I spent a part of my summer with the best of the best. The black folks who did everything we told we supposed to do. And so and then people accuse me of being anti-money. And I ain't, and money is anti-me. So if I am anti-money, money started it. Money started this beef. I'm just going to finish it because money sure don't be coming my way like I be wanting it to. So I'm not anti-money. But there's an old saying, and I have to leave with this. Sin is not what you do, but the spirit in which you do it. So it's not about whether you got money or not, but what are your larger intentions? Do you want money just to increase your consumption capacity to further integrate yourself into the systems and institutions of your oppressor? Or do you want money as a resource, as a tool to set up your own independent, resilient infrastructure to counter your oppressors? You know, so it's not what you do. I'm not anti-money, you know. I'm just saying we need to stop. We've been so separate from money. We've been so, and when black folks get money, the first thing they want to do is get out the hood. So we don't really understand the potential that money has to serve us and the limitation money has on a political level. So I'm just saying we need to be more realistic about fiat, what it is and what it can and can't do for us. I ain't saying reject it or live your life centered on it, you know, but.
Right.
Anyway, I got to wrap this gavel up, and I'll see you Friday. Thanks for calling in, sis. And,
no problem, brother, and thank you for what you do. Have
and
a
thank
good
you,
day.
Too. All right, sis. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Where's the button? All right. Anyway, I guess we'll pick up here when we come back on Killing Revolution, Killing Revolutionaries and Distorting Revolution. And y'all enjoy Fred Hampton Day. Share some insights, videos, lectures, and information about Chairman Fred Hampton, the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense, the COINTELPRO program. Help to give Chairman Fred Hampton the station he deserves amongst our ancestors and amongst our consciousness. Never forget. And oh, and the well, anyway, I have all the info for. The weekend activity here in Chicago, African Arts Festival. I'll have all that on Friday. And maybe a guest. Mystery guest. I don't know. I don't know how to get more listeners, man. You know, titillate and tantalize y'all with guest hosts. But anyway, that's the Bro Diallo show for today. I see y'all or hear y'all, feel y'all Friday morning. Straight out of Chicago, Sanctuary City of Chicago, Q4 Radio, AM 1680. Diallo Kenyatta is down, but it will be up either this evening or tomorrow as soon as I get things worked out with the hosting company. So, you know, don't give up on me yet. I ain't giving up on y'all ever. So do me that much. Peace.